Hey, beautiful people, and welcome to the Tell Me a Story podcast. I'm your host, Eric Bell. If this is your first time on the show, this is the kind of podcast where I have different people coming on and they tell me their favorite story. And buckle up, because these stories range. From the relatable to the intense to the traumatic, there is something for everyone here. And I know you guys will love these stories as much as I enjoyed hearing them myself. Hey, what's up, beautiful people? Today on my show, I had Samson McCormick. And he is one of the best comedians I've ever had the pleasure of working with, like, hands down, like, seriously, the best. And he gives me a great story about coming up as a gay man in a very black church, and they with their strong opinions about homosexuality. And so he goes into that and is a fucking sad, empowering, incredible story. And then we start talking about being a black man as a stand-up comedian, which I haven't had a conversation like that in a long time. And it was something that was very therapeutic for both of us. And we get some real talk. If you guys want to know what it's like being a black man coming up in stand-up comedy, you're gonna hear some shit. But you're gonna definitely hear how incredible Samson's story is. And I know you guys are gonna love him as much as I do. Please enjoy. Like this. This is actually one of my favorite. Zenc, out of all the softwares I've used to do podcasting, Zencastr, hands down the best.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice and smooth, downloads nice and easily. We both have different tracks when it comes to recording, so editing smooth and everything.
Okay.
But Samson, thank you for coming on Tell Me a Story.
Thank you for having me on. So, a story.
Yeah. I know you got a bunch of them, but, I also know you're about to come out. Did the movie just drop, or is it about to come out?
We've been having exclusive sneak peeks. So, it will be out later this month.
I'm excited.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of a good story to tell. It can be about anything.
Anything you want. I've literally, since I started this show back last year, and in the 50 shows we've done, the range of stories, because, of course I'm going to have a bunch of comics on here. So I've heard sex stories. I've gotten stories from sex workers. I've heard cage fighting stories. I've heard, like, just nice, wholesome, like a day in the life story, racism, sexism. It's literally been... I've gone through a roller coaster of emotion. I have thought of, wow, we're really doing good. We're going all the way culturally. And then we're fucked. Everyone's horrible. So literally anything you want to talk about.
Okay. So I give you a nice, wholesome story.
All right. Give me a wholesome one.
I'll give you a nice, wholesome, family friendly story. So when I used to go to church as a little boy, I'm from DC. My family's from North Carolina. I was obsessed with Jesus. From my earliest age, I can remember being in church, being in Sunday school, seeing my mom in the choir, all the pomp and circumstance of the Black Pentecostal experience. It's very charismatic. It's very in your face. They throw oil on you. They do backflips over the seats. They swing around on the chandelier. And then around them. And mind you, this is from 8 a.m. till about 3 p.m. every Sunday.
Oh, my God.
Then you get a break from 3:30 p.m. to 4:15 p.m. to go downstairs in the basement and get a fish sandwich. When that usher says, "All right, everybody, go back upstairs," you got to cram that fish sandwich in your mouth and take your ass back upstairs to the sanctuary.
Wow.
For evening service, which lasts from 5 p.m. till about 8 p.m. So this is about 13 hours of church every Sunday.
I grew up Catholic. Uh-huh. So I am used to having to go to, Sunday mass and everything. And luckily I never went to Sunday Cool. And I went to the Sunday, you know, school kind of thing, because I went to Catholic school. So I had to go to Catholic school from kindergarten all the way to I graduated high school. But 12, a whole day of worship?
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Because I've been to Catholic church, and I'm going to tell you, old black people from back in the day, they could never do Catholic, because you're in there for 15 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, you go in, they sing one song, they put some smoke in the air, they pass that cup around, they say, peace be unto you, o simile, and they tell you to go home. That's Catholic church. And it depends where you're at, they might spank you, but other than that, you know. So, you know, at the Black Pentecostal experience, you're up in there every day. Then there might be a meeting about finances or something after the evening service. So it's an ongoing thing. So this was community. This was the earliest thing that I knew about community. This was the earliest thing I really learned about developing family outside of what you're given. And I looked forward to it until I turned about 12 years old. And that's when, I started missing Sunday. They transitioned you from Sunday school to the church service. Mm-hmm. You're required to be up in there with the adults. And then that's when I started hearing the pastor use a word, faggot. Mm. God hates faggots. They're weak. They destroy the image of the black man. They spread AIDS, their abominations, their this and that. And I didn't know what a faggot was. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a bad word. I knew sissy was a bad word. I knew punk. They didn't, black people, we don't say punk, we say punk. You know, I knew a punk was a bad thing. And I just knew that everybody in the service would get up and clap, and they would just be, they were like stomping. They were like totally with any message that he had against homosexuals and faggots and this and that. And I didn't know what that was until one Sunday he said, I'm tired of seeing these boys kissing these boys. And I was like, oh, damn, I think he's talking about me. So I grew up listening to that from the time I was about 13 until I was 19, which is when I started going out on dates with guys and stuff like that. And hearing this pastor, his name was Elder Smith, say this stuff about gay people, and particularly black gay men. And so, of course, the first time I ever did anything outside of just a date with somebody I went out on a date with, I caught an STD.
Oof.
And I caught a cold, a real bad cold.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's going to mess with your cycling on so many levels.
This is in 2000 and, this is like in 2004, 2005 or something like that. Because I was a late bloomer going out on dates and whatnot. So the STD got cleared up. They used to give you, now they give you a shot. Don't ask me how I know. But, you know, back in the day, they used to give you two weeks worth of pills to take.
Yeah.
And you had to take the pills every day. And I also had was telling the doctor. So he was like, have you had any other symptoms or anything, whatever, whatever. And I'm like, I also caught a really bad cold. And he was like, well, you know, HIV, one of the symptoms is, you know, you catch a really bad cold. So I'm like, what? And you know, he explained HIV and he explained how it turns into AIDS. And so all I could hear was this pastor in my head saying God punishes gay people with AIDS.
Oof.
So I'm like, oh my God, I felt bad for liking guys and going out on dates with men and stuff like that. So I go to take that test. That first test comes back negative after 2 weeks. Might have been 3 weeks, because, you know, back in the day they had to take the blood. You had to wait 2.5-3 weeks to get your results back.
That's a long 2.5-3 weeks.
Hell yeah. You talk about anxiety. So That result came back negative, and then not too long after that, they changed it to a 20-minute test. So he told me, he said, if you do develop anything, you have 3 to 6 months to take another test to get the final result. So he said, you know, let me refer you to a local clinic who specializes in outreach to your community, and they can really address the type of needs and questions you might have in a more intimate setting. Yeah. So I'm from DC. I went to this clinic called Whitman Walker. No, it was Max Robinson Center in Southeast. Oh. Fasten your seatbelt.
We're going on a journey here.
I get up in there, and it was this black woman who I felt more comfortable with. I didn't feel as much judgment talking to her about what my sexual interests were and things like that. And, you know, I'm sitting up in there and I'm telling her, oh, you know, I feel so bad, this and that. She's like, well, don't feel bad. You know, we're going to take the test. So I think it was a finger test or something back then. I'm not sure, but I know you had to wait 20 minutes. That 20 minutes was the heaviest, most anxiety ridden 20 minutes you could ever sit through.
Yeah.
She calls me back in her office and she goes, so I got some news about your results. And I want you to understand that no matter what result I give you, you're going to be fine, this and that. So she prolonged this thing.
She wanted to build the drama?
Yeah. By now, pee is running down my leg. Oh, God. Not quite, but it could have been.
I mean.
And she finally goes, your test result came back negative. So I'm like, oh my God. And she was like, the next time you come in here, make sure you actually have sex, because I didn't have sex. I just did some other stuff.
Oh my God.
Because I found out you can catch STDs from oral and this and that. And so it was just an STD, and it was the winter time, so I had caught a cold, real bad cold. And she was like, none of it was related. So I was like, oh my God, you almost killed me, lady. So Eric, I walk out, and as I'm leaving out, the pastor from the church is coming into this clinic to get tested.
What? Oh my, wait. God, what a cliche. Oh my God. Guy spouting all that kind of hate, and he's just, this is the things he was judging himself, things that he was, wow, that is projecting on a toxic level right there. That is,
and we made eye contact on the way out, because he knew, because my mother had taken me up to the front of the church quite often and whispered into his ear, he's dealing with homosexual spirits.
Oh my God. So you grew up with this man just constantly judging you. Meanwhile, behind closed doors, he's, in his words, living a life of sin. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. You know, you hear it. You hear this stuff happening on the news, but it's just like, actually experiencing it, that is so much darker. I mean, my God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I like growing up black, you know, I'm so proud, you know, I'm growing up very proud of our culture, very proud of our, you know, like how black men are meant to, like, there's an emphasis of being strong. There's an emphasis of doing right and handling your business and all that. But my God, the vile black culture specifically can have towards gay men is just way vicious, and it's like, it's the most disappointing thing about our race. Like, and it's like, oh, because my cousin, you know, love that man and gay, and I even though we had a grandfather who we knew loved us, but we also knew his opinion,
right?
about gay, and God rest his soul. But and apparently he, you know, later on in his years, you know, when you start reaching the end, you start, you know,
you understand.
Yeah, you know, that hate, it's harder to hold on to hate, especially when you have a, you know, cousin that you love. Well, for him, a nephew, a grandson. And it was just, oh man, it must be very, I can only imagine how difficult it is, because this is your family, this is your home, this is where you're supposed to feel most protected, especially from the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but my God, so he tested positive for HIV.
Well, that I don't know, because I wasn't in the room with him.
That didn't get around.
That I don't know, but I do remember feeling a lot less guilty when I saw him in there. I felt I was like, well, if he's in there, I must not be too bad. We doing the same thing, you know, because this clinic was specifically made for the Black LGBT community.
Mm. It was far enough away from the neighborhood.
Yeah, it was in the cut. It's like in Southeast, which is like a very poor part of DC. And mm-hmm. so in places like that, a lot of, well, now it's a little different, but back then there was such a special emphasis placed on the Black LGBTQ community and other at-risk communities that you had to specifically look for a place like this or be referred to a place like this.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to happen upon it. It's not going to be like, oh yeah, there's a sign right there.
No, I mean, now if he was smooth, you know, he could have been like, oh, I'm just here to pray for some people. I'm just here to drop off some faith pamphlets. Yeah, but the way he was dressed, you know, sweatpants, a little t-shirt. I think he had a jacket on. He had one of those uncle hats. You know, little uncle, mm-hmm. uncle little. I got one in here. He got one of them little page boy uncle hats, and he just kind of, it was the way he came in. It's a walk where you're dealing with so many thoughts as you're walking into a space that I know all too well.
Yeah. Yeah. That look in his eyes, that disposition. Yeah. Looks like a guy about to go through some shit right there.
Mm-hmm. And it I think I needed that. And it was funny because another one of the things, that experience, I'm happy that I had it, even though it hurt and it sucked and it was the worst, you know, having that counselor go while we were having a conversation, you know, she talked to me about religion, which for a lot of Black men, and in particular Black queer men, and I would imagine anybody else in any other sort of religion, or, you know, when you're programmed to believe that you aren't worthy of love in any capacity, whether it be spiritual, whether it be physical, from your family, whatever. I can imagine how, I don't like to use the word trauma because people overuse that word.
Oh my God, it was so traumatic. It was so much,
Life is traumatic, you know. But I can imagine what that will do. So I'm happy early on I got that out of the way. And so I remember talking to her and she was saying some crazy stuff. I was trying not to cuss too much, but I'm gonna tell you what I said. So we were sitting Yeah, I try not to cuss too much. But she said, I remember talking to her and she said, why do you feel so bad about being gay? And I said, because, you know, my church and because this and that. And she was like, well, you know, everything in the Bible isn't true. And I said, you know, I was ready to run out of that office. I was like, oh, she done lost her mind. Then she said, and if you weren't supposed to have sex, God wouldn't have made it. And I was like, oh, this bitch done lost her mind. That's what I said to myself. I said those words in my head. You know, I said, this bitch done lost her mind. And so, because it scared me so much, I was like, that's blasphemy. Especially if you've grown up hearing, and she was a woman, which I had to unlearn a lot of stuff about that, because you grew up in church. You know, especially if you grew up in a Black church, it's very patriarchal.
Oh, extremely. There's like such a, unless you grew up with, you know, like I grew up with a very activist mother. So she was very much like, she had to constantly like, yeah, that is bullshit right there. That is. But the fact is she had to constantly say it because that was, you know, like the hierarchy, like you are beholden to your husband. And then that's the end of the sentence. It's not vice versa. It's just that.
You're his property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oof. So, like, yeah, a lot of black men have to kind of get that, you know, you got to get, life has to take that out of you.
Yeah. Or
you just got to have someone around you who's also a part of your development to tell you. It's a very religion. It's indoctrination. It is a level of indoctrination because you're given it so young. Like my wife, she's a very religious woman, and and our son is 5 now, so she wanted to start, you know, incorporating religion, you know, like bedtime stories kind of thing.
And oh wow!
And I was like, that's all you. I am not. I'm not. It, mostly because what's written down is kind of extremely judgmental and all that stuff. And she came to me just yesterday. She was like, you know, that book, that children's book that your mom gave me, I got to find a different book. I was like, why is that, babe? And she's like, well, you know, I was like, Jesus was perfect. And don't you want to be perfect too? And I was like, yeah, that's the book I read. Cause Catholics are all about judging you and telling you you're bad and wrong and everything. You have to be like Jesus, who is this personification of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's like, it is that riddled into you every single day. And God can do everything. And Jesus can do everything. And for a 5-year-old, you're just going to take that hook, line, and sinker. And anything that says, and as my wife, apparently, as she was reading it, she was like, and we're not, no, not this. I was like, religion. Mm-hmm. Like religion. It's trying to give you a sense of this is how the world works, period. Mm-hmm. Not an actual representation of how the world is. And yeah, there's so much you got to unlearn. I mean, like, I grew up growing up Catholic, and I just thought every single feeling or thought or thing I wanted to do was so wrong and everything. So it's like,
it probably contributed to a lot of anxiety for you too, right?
Oh yeah, sure. Of course. Of course.
One thing that I also learned too was that, was growing up like that. And and I'm not religious now. I think I have an element of spirituality. And I try to do the right thing as far as how I treat people. Now, if I want to go cuss, or if I want to smoke some weed, or, you know, have 2 or 3 people over here or something like that, I'm going to do that because you only live one time and, you know, you need to have a good time while you're here.
Yeah, not here for a long time.
You need to be here for a good time.
Damn right.
You know, but I mean, there are simple things that I think you live by to be a decent human being. And mm-hmm. those things I do, you know, I treat people well. I treat people the way I want to be treated. All that type of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, pet puppies, you know, smile at babies.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
When you got some extra cash, yeah, I'll give it to charity.
You know, try to be good. But, yeah, it was just a lot of unlearning that, and mostly because, especially with Christianity, a lot of the things that you learn make you very gullible. That world that you grew up in, very sheltered in that religious bubble, it's not the real world. So if you come out into the world with those set of principles, which some of them are really good principles to come into the world with and live by. But if you come into the world believing that that's how everybody plays the game of life, you are going to be sadly mistaken and disappointed.
Yeah.
You know,
and you might just go a little bit, and sometimes you go a little too hard. You know, sometimes it's like, it's such a shock to the system. You either revert back, Or you can kind of go a little too crazy, you know?
How so?
Oh, I went growing up Catholic, and just everything was just wrong. I had to do, couldn't curse, couldn't do any of this stuff. And then I moved out of my parents' house when I was 18, and I was, because they moved to Vegas, and I was like, oh, I grew up in LA. I want to go to college in LA. So I went to college in Long Beach, and I had my own place at 18, growing up Catholic. And I just wilding out for my entirety of my 20s, did a lot of stupid, you know, drugs and partying and like everything I could get my hands on, any experience I could take, I took it. And which I came out on the other end of it, you know, obviously being a little bit more worldly and a little bit more understanding of people, I got that taken out because I got to experience it. At the same time, I did a lot more dangerous things that I needed to do.
Why did you do that?
Well, just because it was because of that shelter.
Okay.
That I had. I was so curious about everything because all of it was like behind this wall of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still young. I'm still like, I'm in my 30s now, but I'm in my early 20s. And like, because I'm gullible, because I am like, I'm taught to think a particular type of way. I don't really have strong problem solving, critical thinking skills on different people. Because there's good people who follow Jesus, and then there's sin, and you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it sin. I would just call it real life. You know, if you don't, you know, just like people say trauma, I say, well, it's just real life. You know, and it really comes down to. I mean, granted, there are some people who deal. This is a little insensitive. Some people might say, and that's okay. But as comedians, I think that we look at life and approach life a lot differently, because I think in order to be a comedian, a good one.
Yeah. Just say whatever they want.
Well, you know, you see some rich white kids get up there who are up there because I don't know why they up there, but you know, they get up there and they talk about, peanut butter, or they talk about how disappointed they were to go to Starbucks and spill their drink or something, and everybody in the audience is like, really, really?
Yeah, no struggle, there's just nothing there. And they usually don't go so far. They don't really
They
get better gigs at the jump.
Yeah.
I've noticed they get way better gigs at the jump, and they get further along at a more natural, you know, like, they're 10 steps naturally ahead. They're able to invest a little bit more, and they're able to meet different people, as opposed to the guy who got to go to those open mics, got to, you know, just get their email out there as much as they can, go to the bigger gig, get ignored by the person who's at the bigger gig until maybe one person you know is there. And then there's so many, you know, when you don't have it, when you don't have the luxury.
Please, let's talk about that right quick, because I'm all about that, you know, because I don't think we really get to talk about that. We don't get to have raw conversations about that. Yeah. And for you, because I'm curious to know, because I'm just as interested in your stories. For you, I think we're both black men. You know, we both have had to come in this business and get it from the mud. So coming into it, when you, especially if you know you're killing it.
Yeah.
And you go to these shows and you get ignored by Booker over here.
Yeah.
How have you dealt with that?
It's always a kick in the nuts. You know, like I remember the first few times that it was happening that I would, decent guy, great guy. Kevin Pringle. He kind of like, I first started doing comedy. He's a bigger white guy, and he was running a class, but generally good guy, you know. And he was like, okay, so how do I get gigs? What's the way for me to get gigs so I can stop doing these open mics? And you know, he gave me that. Well, you want to show up? You want to show up to the show, and you know, just mingle, be social, and see if maybe you know someone at the show. That was always good. See if you can get that 5-minute guest spot. See if you can, you know, tell them where you've been. Tell them blah 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 blah, that kind of thing. I was like, right on, cool. I'll do that. And then I had, for God knows, the first couple of years, I would do mics. I would try to get those guest spots, kill at those guest spots. Like, I had people like, like shaking my hand. I only did 5 minutes. The feature fucking died on stage. And I have been in those situations where I have only done 5 minutes, and I've had like a line of audience members shaking my hand, taking my pictures, like, oh, we wanted you to go longer. Meanwhile, the feature just already left out back because he had he bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And still can't even get 5 minutes with the booker. And I, you know, I'll shake their hand and be very polite, talk about my career. Like, oh, yeah, that'll be cool. That'll be cool. All right, well, you have a great day, man. And it's just like, goddamn, all right, well.
Do you feel like they kind of intentionally ignore you or overlook you?
I think what is, I definitely always initially had that feeling of like, wow, they're just straight ignoring me. Now, a lot of times I think they may already have their black guy. Or they think I am going to provide a typical type of comedy, and they think their audience ain't going to vibe with it. I consider it like, you know, a lot of it. What it came? Do you remember when Sony got hacked, and like all of Sony Pictures got, and all those emails came out, and they were talking about Idris Elba about being Bond, and they're like, "Oh, black men don't sell across overseas." Like, they've already, like, the people who have the, they already know how the audience is going to react to the black guy. I'm not racist, but they are, you know, they are. And I need their money. So that's why, that's their, like, reasoning. So I always felt that was, and then on top of that, when people have actually seen me do stand up, because I'm a nerd comic, I talk about anime and I talk about growing up and being around nerds my whole life.
When I saw you, you was talking about guns and hoes when I saw you.
I was living in Hawthorne at the time, so there was I was living in Hawthorne. What else am I talking about? But like, I would go up and I would talk about this kind of stuff and talk about being a dad, being a nerd and all that stuff. And I get off stage like, man, I had no idea you were going to, you know, they would talk about how surprising my style of comedy was, mm-hmm. which they're telling me two things with that. You're telling me how you thought I was going to sound like, and you're telling me what you think about black comedians, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I always, for so many years, I would always feel like there's just like this barrier I have to break. It made me not want to just go and support shows. It made me not want to, because like, why? They ain't going to think, I'm like, I'm going to be like this black guy in the corner waiting for my opportunity to talk to the guy.
And it's exhausting.
And then there's so many, like one out of maybe 3 out of 10, they will be a decent person and they'll be talking to me like, oh, do you know? Like, yeah, man, I know. Like, we went here. Hey, they're like, yeah, okay, come back next week. Let's get you. You know, like, okay, cool. And but the other 7 times, here's the card. I have this card. They'll send me an email. Sent you an email. You know, it's actually the 4th time we met.
Right.
You
know? And they don't respond.
Don't respond to the emails. And I get a lot of emails. You know, I remember when I used to run shows. And so, like, you get a lot of emails, sure. But when you meet the person and they have been referred to you, you know, and then, like, and then I'll go to the show again and I'll see, like, 8 other newbie white guys, you know, who got their shot. And it's like, huh. That's interesting, because I definitely had that experience when I moved to Vegas, you know. Luckily, a lot of people who run shows out here are comics themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was, and I have been doing comedy for so long that the comics I came up with are, like, I can show up and, like, yeah, that's the headliner. That's my homie. You know, so the door is a little bit more wider open.
Yeah.
But but still, like, I come into town, I had all this experience, and I'm ignored once again. I've been doing comedy for 10 years, and I can't even get the guy to look me in the fucking eye.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, I'm like, did you even hear the names I just said? They told me to come meet you. I got like 4 references. You just booked the other guy, and they're like, oh, well, how about you just do shows around town and let's do the local scene for a minute, and then maybe we can talk.
Yeah, or either you can get up there and you can kill. And mm-hmm. have people standing up on the tables clapping, and they'll tell you need to go work on your material some more.
Yeah, I have been because I have like you're good at comedy, like and I'm still, even though I'm talking about now, I'm all about bringing up charisma. I'm very charismatic on stage, so I'm not the which is good comedy too. I like that style too, but I'm not the laid back. I'm not the, you know, just bop, bop, bop. Oh, hilarious. I'm very active. I'm out on stage. I'm moving around. So I bring up the energy.
You're very engaging.
All the time. I like it. I like the excitement, mostly because I'm nervous as shit. You know, so, but those are the butterflies I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I I just want everyone to experience it with me. So I'm very high energy. So I'm probably going to get bigger laughs than a lot of other comics, especially if a lot of them have been kind of this way the whole way. I'm going to raise it up, you know, and I've been in so many situations where I've done it. Give me the 5 minute spot. I'm the feature, whatever part of the show I'm on, and still can't even get the conversation going. Meanwhile, the next week, I see some random chick, very pretty, and but she's still got to grow. Yeah. She's still growing, you know. Or the white guy, he's still growing. I'm not gonna say they're hack comics because
it's okay to say it. They hack comics. Go ahead.
Yeah, but sometimes you're at different levels, you know. And so it's, you know, I when I came into town to Vegas. And I didn't know anyone and no one would give me a shot. I had to just go to an open mic. And the second I was at the open mic, everybody was like, oh my God, like, well, I've been doing this for longer and you guys are on your road, you know? So I'm not going to call you a hack. I'll go call you a hack if you're on a gig where I should be getting paid and you're on stage getting paid, which has happened.
Oh, you see that a lot. But the funny thing is in reverse, what I've observed is that, say, J-Spot or something. I know you've been to J-Spot. You know, you go to J-Spot a black comedy club, a white comedian can come to one of our clubs and get some time without no problem.
Yeah. We like to check. Constantly. They're like, and they embrace the different, you know? And like, and then go out there, make them laugh. I love seeing the white guy at the black club. I love it. Because I'm either going to see them. I'm either going to see incredible skill, or I want to see a crash and burn that I'm never going to experience watching TV. Right. I want to see. Oh, he did it! He did it! It didn't land. Oh my God!
But the funny thing about that is, the black audience. Even if you're a white comic bombing in front of a black audience, the black audience is gonna make it fun for you.
They're gonna try to have a good time anyway. They do.
Yeah, man.
I know it's, but man, being the black guy going into the white show, it's such a like constant. Like, oh, I guess. I remember I started doing it would happen so often. I would just open my bit with, I guess I'm the black comic for the evening. How are you guys doing? And it's just like an easy, quick laugh because I know everyone has noticed it because, again, I'm the black comic for the show, you know? And I remember I was doing a gig at the Oyo Casino, and just by happenstance, you know, because I know John, he's not like Machiavelli with how he books. And it just happened to be there were 7 comics on the show, 6 of them were black.
Okay. You know,
like, the people who are making the jokes all the time, where the black people are like, what the fuck's going on here? There was this,
this is different.
I'm like, oh yeah, 6 black comics on a show. It just happens to be February. You don't think we know what you're fucking doing?
Right, or, right.
And you know, like, but it was so, but that was the thing. This is a white crowd in a casino on the strip. And it's just like, it's mostly white audiences, white Asian. And mostly white comics. And so it was just like, we couldn't help but constantly talk about the fact that there were 6 of us. Because I think 10 years of doing comedy, unless I was doing a black, you know, a black comedy show, I was never, that was a first, you know, for me. Like, wow, this is a white show and there's mostly black people. At the most, it's usually just me. Mm-hmm. Or at the most, me and one other, and like the chick, or me and one other guy at the most. But that's a show where it's like 6-7 comics. But oh my God, it's such, I think black people have a harder time booking the shows outside of the community. And I remember I was having a conversation, I forgot the guy's name, but because I had taken a step back from the black shows and I was trying to do more shows in Orange County. And
was it because you wanted more opportunity?
I wanted more opportunity. I wanted different crowds. I wanted to see how my act would work in other places. And so I started going out, and I remember a black comic was like, no, man, you gotta go to the black rooms, man. You gotta like, well, I wanna do more shows. It's like, yeah, you'll get up a lot less. And I just remember that point that you said, like you can get further just doing black shows. You can really get further just doing black shows. And but you can, you know, good luck. You probably get paid. If you get the good gig, you'll get paid more, but you won't see that too much.
Let's talk about that real quick, because I've always wondered that too. Because I mean, I like black shows because you can be raw at a black show.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, facts is facts. If you're playing white or mainstream rooms, those are the things that expand your opportunities and that allow you to really develop the type of name for yourself that putting 10 years into a comedy career really makes it worth it.
Yeah.
10 years of comedy is nothing to, no pun intended, it's nothing to laugh at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of just constant. I remember I was doing a show. I was at Jimmy Kimmel's comedy club. And it's because my buddy was a host, and so I'm gonna do the thing because, you know, it's, I was like, hey, I wanna perform at Jimmy Kimmel's, and I'm watching the show, and they're having a rough go at it. They're like, my buddy, he's doing okay. I've seen him do better.
Okay,
you know, but it's reasonable. It's okay. Like, you're the host. I'm not expecting you to get people jumping off their seats. You're the host,
right?
Just keep them engaged. That's your bare bones job. You're keeping them engaged. If you're having a rough go at it, you're not really getting the lasso you want. As long as you're keeping them engaged, you're still doing your job. The chick who came on, she was okay. I've seen, like, they were just having a rough night. Everyone was having a rough night. I won't call them hacks, but they were all having a rough go at it. And the next brother who was on stage, he made a joke about where my black people at, and I made a sound. I realized I'm the only black person in the entire audience. He asked me, what do I do? I was like, I'm a comic. And he's like, come on up. Come on up on stage. I'm like, you don't want me to do this, bro.
Right.
And I got on stage, took the mic, and I got everyone hyped. I did like three minutes of jokes, and I got them all going. And then he got back on stage, made a bunch of jokes about how I wasn't supposed to be good, and everyone was having a good time. You know how hard it has been for me to get back on that same goddamn stage. You know, like, I'm still constantly trying to, like, come to the shows and, you know, talk to the right people. This is all pre-COVID, of course. And, you know, it was still like this kind of grind, you know, like, come on, just give me the fucking spot at this point. Come on, guys. These are out of towners. Mm-hmm. These are out of towners who came in. I'm like, how much more I gotta do? I mean, like, they're very, and I don't want to put them down like there was some type of discriminatory element. It was just like almost just kind of it's constant battle that I'm consistently having, where I will come in, I'll smoke everyone, and then I'm still like five levels under just getting the gig,
right? You know, right.
And but if I do black rooms, they accept me quickly. Especially if I go and kill. If I go and kill, they'll put me up for, like, how long you want to do? You want to be here for the month? You come through, man.
Yeah, come through every night if you want.
I have been in so many situations where, I remember one time I did a show and took fucking forever to get them to book me. And the only reason I got booked was because the brother who was part of it, he was like, fucking book him. Book Eric. You know, you all say you want more black people, and this is a show right across the street from the college. And
wow.
I'm like, dude, young crowd, I'm a nerd comic. I'm gonna fucking murder these guys. I'm gonna murder this crowd. Don't get paid. Don't get paid. I'm outside, having a smoke, and brother comes up like, did he pay you? No. All right, hold on. Because he knows.
He paid me out of his own pocket.
And, you know, so it's like, and it happened, and it's happened so, and like, I was like, I would love to say that that's just the most recent time it's happened. And it's just one of those, like, God, it's just one of those things that is like, yeah, no, yeah. You know, it's like, I'll find out. And I found out, like, there's been times I found out, like, years later. That, you know, like, oh, I just thought none of us were getting paid.
Shit. I sent an email real quick, like, where my money at? I know it was 8 years ago, but I need my money. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh my God. I mean, so many times, like, yo, man, you know that show you did? Yeah, like, yo, you sure? I'm like, you know, I got paid doing the same spot you did. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. I remember there's this show at a strip club, which is always interesting.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. It was here, you know, in L.A.? Or was
no,
it?
It's Las Vegas, Sapphire.
Okay, you know, okay.
It was like they did a comedy show right before the Mel, the Magic Mike kind of show that was following right afterwards. So great crowd, you know, so a lot of the ladies are there, ready to have a good time, but they wanted to see the comedy show before it. It was a variety show, burlesque, and they'll have like a comedian. And I get called in and say, hey, man, we want you to do a guest spot. I'm like, cool. I look at the lineup. Tell me why I'm going after the headliner. I'm going right before the headliner. I'm like, that's a feature spot. That's not a fucking guest spot. That's a feature spot. How much time I'm doing? Oh, you want me to do 15 minutes? This is not a fucking guest spot. This is a, and I still don't get paid. And it's
wow.
Like, and I was like, this is fucking bullshit.
That's
and
bull.
It's
like,
and it's just, and it's happened so often when I do white rooms, you know, black rooms. I have always been paid, even when I probably shouldn't have gotten paid, you know, where I've gone and I just ate a, you know, bag of shit and still, here you go, man. Here you go.
Do you think we pay each other, especially in like a black room, because we understand the grind?
Yeah. Yeah. There's way more respect for the struggle, way more because they've done it. Mm-hmm. They probably had to fight tooth and nail to get the room that they're running a show out of. They probably had to do all types of things. And, you know, it's like, I see that respect. I mean, I remember when I was starting out and the Comedy Store wasn't what the Comedy Store is now right now. You know, it was during that lull where like, ain't no, where it was just banger shows, you know. You know, just banger shows. Rogan hadn't come back yet. None of the, you know, it was just dead zone of nothing. So you like, they'll have a banger show, but you're in the main room because they couldn't pack the main room. And I remember, because I had just started out, I remember having done banger shows before.
Mm-hmm.
And you get nothing out of it. You get zero out of it. And there was a black guy, but the Comedy Store, there was a black guy running the main room.
Okay.
And he paid you, period. He would pay you. He would feed you. He would take care of you. And if he liked you, hey,
This is
right here, right over here. I was like, ain't no. And so when people are like, what about banger shows? Like, unless you do this guy's show, they're like, and I still wouldn't suggest any comic doing banger shows. I would not suggest it. It will do minuscule for your career at the most. And but still, this black man still would help out. He would still try his do what he had to kind of help, because we get it. We get the having to pull yourself up mm-hmm. out of it and take 10 years to get what that white guy got in like five, you know,
or even six months.
Like, oh my God. I have seen so many white boys be in big shows, huge shows. I was like, what the? And they're okay.
And let's not forget about late night.
Oh God. Yeah.
Do you still want to do late night?
No,
I'm there too.
Why? It's like, it's, you know, I want to be booked often, paid well, and to audiences who want to see me, to audiences that would appreciate my comedy, which I know is 90% of audiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't need no fucking late night, you know, fucking credit. I want to do nerd comedy across the country on all these conventions. That's really all I want.
Ooh, I gotta send you a message, because okay. I know somebody who does that.
Great. I've done a few convention shows and killed it every time.
Okay.
But I just need more, because I used to work as press for conventions. I was a journalist for a video game website.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was at Comic-Con and Kamikaze and all these things interviewing, you know, voice actors and, you know, and comic book writers and everything. And I know there's conventions every month, twice, like all around the country. And a lot of adults are nerds. A lot of adults who drink are nerds. So I'm like, they all, because I've gone to the conventions. I'm like, after the convention's over, I'm hyped. I'm like, dude, I got all this cool shit. And I'm like, what's going on? This is when nerds want to come out and play. It's Friday night, it's Saturday night. I've constantly gone to bars and clubs after a comedy show, after a convention. So I'm like, I want to be on comedy shows mm-hmm. that are near or in the convention. And I've done a few of them and murder them, you know? And it's just like, that's where I want. But it's this fucking...
It's the climb. It's like the constant hustle.
The constant. I have never once seen a comfortable, successful black comic. I've seen successful black comics, never seen them comfortable. I've always seen that kind of constant grind in them. They're always working. They're always grinding. They're always moving. I've never seen the relaxed, you know, like... The relaxed comedian, just solely comedian. Maybe they're in like movies and different things, and there's a little bit other, but I've always seen this grind in black comedians because it's like the struggle's never over. You're good. You're good. You got these great gigs lined up and you're working. Yeah. Yeah. You better keep fucking going because that phone call might stop coming.
Do you think that's what keeps us doing it? Because I mean, part of it is it's like you're working against something that's working against you, and it feels good to overcome that.
Yeah, I think one of the like we were talking about earlier, I was saying that one of the benefits of growing up black and growing up a black man is this emphasis of you work hard. You work hard. A black man works hard. Why? Because they're going to make you work hard. And you're going to be a hardworking black man, or you're going to be a lazy fuck that doesn't get shit done. And we know brothers like that. We know brothers who don't even want to get up and do it. You know, we know the lazy fuck. He don't take care of his kids. You know, we know that guy. You know, but if you are a black man, you keep it going. You keep the ride. You don't retire. What the fuck you mean retire? You know?
Right.
You know, and it's just this constant grind because every black guy I know who has older gentlemen, and they still got that fire. They're still trucking along. Probably don't even have to, but they're still
George Wallace.
Yeah. Perfect example. And it's, you know, it's hard. Obviously it's hard to like prove because I don't have statistics. You know, I just have my own personal life experience mm-hmm. and having talked to other black people, especially black men in the business. I know the ladies got their own struggle, but I don't know. I can't, you know, I don't know their unique version of it, but I just can't help but notice about that, you know, this constant grind, which is one of the reasons why I'm so amazed with you, because you're kind of twofold. Because, you know, like, the gay guys who come in, they have their own separate struggle of truck, because they really think there's only one style of comedy they can do. And which is bullshit, because I, like, growing up in Long Beach, I've Long Beach is just basically Southern San Francisco.
Basically. I'm stealing it from you.
Yeah, man, it is. It's like, I grew up with so, you know, especially because I lived in Long Beach my entire 20s. So the entirety when I started doing comedy. And so I came up with a lot of gay men who went to comedy. And so I've heard their stories of, like, you know, they can only do the gay rooms. And so I'm like, dude, gay black man, holy shit, like trying to claw your way out, the struggle is real with, you know. So I've always been amazed with you, man, and I commend you on all the success you have.
Thank you.
It did not come easy. It was like no way it came easy.
I low-key was happy that we were quarantined because I was exhausted. I was tired,
dude. I feel I'm worried. Like, I honestly, there's one worry I have that when the vaccine comes out and my mom's good and I don't have to worry about my brother, I don't have to worry about my family catching it, and I'm healthy and I could start doing shows, and I can, like, okay, I'll get the vaccine when I can actually physically get a vaccine, but I'm no longer worried for my entire family's life. Am I still going to have that hunger that I know I need to have to get the work that I was getting and to get more? Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, because I prefer to be on a podcast talking to you. And I, it's just like, man, that fight is like, you know, like I was watching, I forgot what fighter. I think it was DC, UFC fighter. And he was talking about when they realized like that hunger that you need before you go into the cage, you know, it's like that motivation that is required because you're about to go in there with a guy with more motivation. You don't want that scenario to happen.
Yeah.
You don't want that. And my, like, so I'm like, damn it. If I'm going back to comedy and I'm going to have the same level of motivation and hunger and drive to beat that younger black comic instead, he's going to have it. He's going to have it. And that is a grind. I think I still got it in me, but I won't know until I'm back to doing gigs.
Is it because when you say that, do you think it's because of the work that goes into it? It's just so exhausting.
Man. That is 100% a factor. It's probably a twofold because I am a family man. And it was one of those kind of the worst parts of stand-up comedy was the fact that I am not home as much as I would like to be. You know, like I don't have the sweet local gig. I don't have that guaranteed every weekend at this big club that pays me well. I don't have that. I got to go. I got to find it. I got to go run for it. Hey, babe, I gotta go to Arizona real quick. I'm going to just do a weekend in Arizona. I got to go over here in Utah. I got to go to Utah real quick. And then I got to go here. And then every so often coming home, like, they didn't pay me.
Oh, my God. Can we talk about that real quick? Because you're married. How does your wife deal with that?
Not well. Yeah, I'm blessed with her love. I am truly blessed with her love. And I make sure we don't put ourselves in any type of financial strain. I gotta take that in consideration. I gotta be like, can I afford to go here in case it does not work out? In case all of a sudden that couple hundred turns into, oh, here's some gas money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in case these lineup of shows that I'm supposed to have booked pay me as much as I could have made staying at one random local show, you know, I got to take that into consideration. So luckily I never put us in a financial strain, but I do take away my presence from a household that, you know, there's a 5-year-old in and she married me. So she actually wants to spend time with me. So it's definitely one of those like, ugh, that also adds to it. And on top of that, it is exhausting.
Yeah.
Black men, we can't just live hollow lives. We handle our business, so we tend to have more responsibilities than just comedy, and we're gonna do our best to handle all of those responsibilities. So not only is comedy exhausting because I'm here from, okay, is it 8 o'clock show? You want me to do the 8 o'clock, the 10 o'clock? I'm not on the midnight show, but I probably need to talk to the guy who's at the midnight show, and I gotta hang out and I gotta build up my rep with this. Okay, so I'm gonna be gone from like 6 p.m to come home at 3 a.m.
Oh, as, man.
As sometimes. And I was like, and I remember I just straight stopped doing midnight shows. I just like, no, I'm not. No, no. Why? I'm not going to get a ton of more extra money. You know, it's like if that at all. And so it's just like, and so comedy is such a long grind. And when you're black, you're going to deal with a lot of times they're not going to pay you, even though they said they're going
even
to
though,
pay you.
Well, that's why you got to take a gun with you.
You know, I can't really argue with that logic. Especially if they know you're strapped. If they know that you're the black guy who's always strapped and like you have like a good like maybe 3 minutes in your act about having a gun.
Right.
That's my public service announcement to any black comic. Have 3 minutes worth of your act talking about being a gun owner.
That's right.
Just put that in there. You will get paid more.
You will get paid.
Because they're like, no, hold on.
Hold on, let's give him his money. We don't want to make him upset.
Yeah, pull some tips, guys. Pull some tips.
I don't know about you, but I'm getting excited thinking about it again, just having this conversation. I mean, I know we are brothers in this struggle.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's a beautiful struggle.
It is. There's almost, it's one of those things. It's easy to get exhausted. It's easy to think about that weight that's constantly on there. But at the same time, when I'm on that stage and it's just, it's music, it's art, it's paint. It's like I'm looking at, I'm living a beautiful art, and like me punchline hits, the crowd goes crazy. They're loving it. I'm able to pull people in a little bit. I'm able to, like, I talk about this one random topic and there's somebody, I'm like, oh shit. And I can pull that energy and I can spread it around the whole room. And then I spend the whole, after the show, I'm just like, yeah, take a picture, click, click, and doing that. There's nothing comparable to that. And I get to experience that because I'm a good comic. I get to experience that pretty much every time I do stand up, you know? And it's like, what was that, you know, a day on, what was that? Like one day on a smooth ocean beats like a month through a storm. And so, because the struggle's real, the struggle's exhausting, and they don't treat you correctly. They ignore you, they underpay you. And meanwhile, you're seeing the white boy get all the accolades, being at half the level you are, like, artistically. But God damn it, that crowd, God damn it, that stage, because, you know, those people love you. Your audience validate you. Your audience is like, oh my God, you're like the best comic I've seen. And like, dude, that's like, I've gotten so many compliments on people who, locals who go to that room all the time, telling me best act I've ever seen here. And we're here. Yeah, me and Jeffrey, we come here every week and you were the best. And I was like, man, I've heard that so many times that it's like, every time I think about it, I remember, like, around the beginning of the first 6 months of the pandemic, I remember talking to my wife, like, babe, I think I might be done. I think, you know, it's like, do I want to put myself through all that again? Do I want to, you know, like, rather be home with you guys and rather be, you know, and then of course talk to a fucking comic.
Right.
And I'm like, ooh. Oh, it's like being a gambleholic and you see a crap table. You're like, so I think sometimes I'm done, but then I know the fuck, I know, like, all that it needs to happen is I need to leave my house and sit down and support, because I still have so many comedian friends. I'm not going to not go to a comedy show. And I think my wife knows that too. My wife knows it too. She's like, if you think, she never like, really, you're done? Okay, we can do this. She's like, oh, if you think so. She puts it right back on me, because she knows the moment, like, oh, hey, honey, I'm gonna go see Rich. Rich is performing tonight. I'm just gonna go support him.
Right.
That's all that needs to happen.
That's all that needs to happen.
Because I'm gonna go, Eric, yo, man, come on, let's do 5 minutes, man. Come on. And I'm gonna be right back into the grain. It's hard, but it's hard not to enjoy not struggling, you know? It's hard not to, like, it's the one illusion the pandemic has given me, you know, like, because there's no reason for me to send it, because, like, I can't leave until my parents are vaccinated. So I'm like, I'm not sending email right now, because, you know, like, until that second needle goes into my mother's arm and my brother's arm, then I ain't going nowhere, you know. But I know the second that happens, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to go to a show, and that's a wrap for me, man.
And it's going to be a wrap.
It's going to be a wrap. I know myself. But it's like, right now I can be in that headspace of like, man, maybe I'm done, man. But I think I'm like that old guy in a movie. You know, like at the beginning of the movie, the guy needs him for the mission. He's like, we need you. I told you I'm retired.
You know, come back just one more time.
Son of a bitch.
Well, I think we are gonna have to get back in shape a little bit when we go back.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely that boxer who's not in shape anymore. I don't have that pop. I remember what, like I was telling you earlier, when I was doing the the little promo. I was just doing a promo. No audience, just me and a camera. I've done this act a billion times. I was so choppy. I was like, I don't know how it came out. You're always more of a judgment on yourself because you know how you perform. And I'm like, God, I'm not even holding. Like, this is not how I hold my mic. I'm holding my mic. Why am I caring about how my physical form? I never cared about my physicality. And I was like, I just felt out of practice, like extremely out of practice because, you know, like it's a muscle. It is a muscle. You can't, and stage rest. I think a lot of comics are going to have stage rest, you know, and it's stand-up comedy is going to look a little rough that first month, you know,
you when think things so? Are back.
I think so. I think there's going to be a lot of unique jokes. I think there's going to be a lot of good jokes that have come from this because a lot of comics had nothing but time to write jokes, but they also haven't had a lot of time to test their jokes.
Yeah.
Because at least for me, I know a lot of comics write differently. I'm the kind of comic that, I'm going to use this 10 minutes. All right. I got 10 minutes up. Okay. Here's 10 minutes. Three of these minutes are brand spanking new. Haven't really tested them out yet. Maybe I've done one open mic on them, but it's still very, very raw. I'm going to put 30 seconds of that at the beginning and I'll just spread it around those 10 minutes because I don't know if these jokes are strong enough to be handled on their own. And I'll kind of sprinkle that in. I'll do that like I usually have my power of three. I'll do it three times. I'm like, okay, the jokes are great. They solid. Let me put them now in the front. I'll put them right there in the front. That's my new opening. 3 minutes. And then repeat. I can't do that unless I am physically doing comedy. I can look at it on paper and I think it's funny, you know, but I've also been proven wrong because as much time as I've done on stage, there's like 8 hours of trash that I've done, you know, that will never see the light of day, or maybe I'll pick that one word or pick that one ending from it, but this was trash. So like, I thought they were funny, but I've done it too many times and the audience have told me it's not.
Right.
Yeah. But this is fucking funny, right? This is right here. Honestly, don't get it. No. Okay, well maybe I'm taking too long. Yeah, I'm just taking it too long. Let me tighten that up right there. Let me just get there. Let me put that story in there. Nope. So like, and that's kind of the method that I, as far as knowing if a joke's good or bad, you know, but I still want to do a great show. So like, I make sure that it's mixed in with gold, you know. I'll never like, you know, it's almost something that I found interesting. I always found more white comics more willing to do all new material, you know, right at the top. They're like, yeah, I'm just going to do new material. Like all new. And it's a show, a page. You're doing all new material for a paid show. Huh. That's Do you?
Maybe you're like, think they can get away with that easier than we can?
I think they do. Yes. I 100% think they can get away with it because they'll forgive a bomb. I think white people get forgiven for bad sets than more so than black people. Like if I bomb, they never call me back.
Right.
I have bomb shows and I'm like, well, I'm never coming back here. Yeah, I know you're not going to call me back. I never.
Even if you killed there 20 times before, you had one bad set,
and I'm like, yeah. Well, thank you guys for having me. You know, like that hasn't happened every time, of course. So, like, there's some good people. Obviously, there's some good white crowds, white bookers that have treated me well. They have treated me very well, and I can always call them. And I'm always like, I'm in their rotation, and I like. Stand up, great guys. Of course, they're there. They're a little bit more rare. Which is why I'll praise their name. I'll praise their name all the time. I'll like every black like I'll say this right now. If you're a black comic and you're in town and you know you're good, you got some chops, I say hit up a guy named John Hilder in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Hit up John Hilder. Will you get paid a lot? He doesn't have a lot to pay you. Real talk. He just doesn't have a lot to pay you, but he'll treat you well. He'll make sure you're, and if he thinks you're funny, he will throw you 8 names and he will say, no, this guy's good. He's just a good guy. And I think that's probably not said enough. And so if you are a person of color and you're just trying to expand, you know, your repertoire, and then obviously if you're, and I want even comics who are, you know, upper echelons do his show. Cause I want shows like that to get bigger.
Yeah.
Cause then I can paid more. And like, I want those shows to be more successful because they give gigs to people of color. And I would like him to be able to pay them more. And he can get paid more if you guys go to those shows. But he's a rarity. He's unfortunately too much of a rarity because I usually don't get treated that well. I usually have to go to black rooms to get treated that with that kind of just general respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And come on, man, we know you're good. Yeah, I know. I know. Pay me like I should be paid.
Instead of
making me have to give you 8 different references and having it was
and 20 credits.
20 credits. You got it. It was like, oh, well, have you ever done this show? No. Like, well, you know, maybe try to get in there first before. Like, what, do you book that show? Why the fuck do I need to get this fucking guy to? They're like, all right, cool. Hey, you know, I did the show because there's a show out here that I just can't respect. I just don't respect it.
Which one is it?
It's the Dirty at 12:30 at the South Point Casino.
Okay.
And I just don't. I don't respect the booker. He has a phenomenal wife. This is it's one of those one things like, why is she with you? Because she's actually a good person and a sweetheart. You're making people jump through hoops and kiss your ass to, you know, do it. And then on top of that, he like steals headliners from other clubs. So I even hear on the backside that he's kind of a shit. But I have been referred to him by a multitude of different people.
Mm-hmm.
Like a multitude, like people who's headline, people who is featured, his guest. Like I've had that, hey, yo, man, you got to put my buddy Eric on. You're like, oh, yeah, go ahead and email me. Dude, you got like 5 emails in your Facebook, man. You got like 5 emails on you. And then I'll see some random Joe feature who ain't even that good. Not even that good. And it's like, dude, how much do you fucking make people grind just to, but he, like, he'll fuck with you if you're big.
Yeah.
He'll fuck with, because of course they will. Then there you don't see color. You don't see color
you
there.
See green.
You know? You see green. They're like, yeah, you're in. You're in anytime you want. I'm like, yeah, because you know, because he has a name attached to him. But yeah, I just like, and yet he is the spot that everyone goes to see because he has one of the biggest shows in Vegas. He does. He hands down has the biggest local show in Las Vegas. Like, it's not even comparable. You know, mm-hmm. Packed house every Friday midnight is stacked. And
is the show funny?
Yeah, it's funny because people are fucking working as hard as they can because they want him to like them. So when I see that black person doing the feature or doing the opening spots, they're fucking giving it their all. Their all, because this is a massive room and it's at the South. It's a casino show, but apparently does not pay his guest or his all those comics at the beginning. He only pays his feature and his headliner, but he has more than just 2 comics. And again, massive crowd, and it's the biggest show in town. I'm like, so I'm thinking, like, fuck you, dude. It's like, why? Like, I had small shows when I was living in LA. I had small ones I was running. I paid, you know, like I, like not a lot, but I would, if I got money, if someone gave me money to run the show, I'm going to, okay, all right. I only have, because like, oh, wow, I only got $60. Well, 10 for you, 10 for you, 10 for you, 10 for you. All right. Yeah, I wanted more than 20, but, you know, I'm not going to keep, because, like, you're struggling. Like, we know, because, like we were saying earlier, black people, we understand the struggle. Mm-hmm. We understand it. And it's just so, it happens so much, way longer than it should happen for a comic who's done as long as I've done.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, me being able to get paid well, often, and consecutively, should not have taken, you know, like 10 some odd years, and still more off and on than I had cared for it to be. And it's like, meanwhile, I look over around my shoulder and I see a random white guy who's good. He's not mind blowing.
Right.
He's not. He's good. I'm like, I'm not gonna take anything away from the man's skill. He's solid, you know, solid comic. Would be if I came on a show and at the times I come on a show, like, oh, what's up, bro? Hey, how you doing? Oh, it's gonna be a good night. Okay, cool. But he's never been a holy shit, man. Now that guy
is gonna kill it.
He's gonna kill it no matter what. No, I haven't seen. I have seen that so much rarer in some of the white guys who I've shared the stage with than some of the brothers. And you know, like I've seen brothers like, dude, this guy's going to. Fucking, I'm outside watching the show. you know, where normally I'm outside in the alley and I'm walking back and forth. Because I have all this built up energy that I want to get out. So I'm usually not sitting down watching the show. Or if I am, I'm all in the back of the bar, kind of. But I'm still like kind of a pacer. But I know those brothers, I'm like, dude, I got no. This guy's funny, man. This guy's funny. And then again, there I'm going to see that brother struggle to get the gig. I'm going to see that happen. And the game is exhaustive. It's very exhausting. I am curious to see how comedy's going to be now when everything's back up and running, because I know audiences are going to be thirsty for stand up. They're going to be thirsty for experiences.
You think so?
You know? Oh yeah, they've been at home.
Okay.
They've been at home. And okay. I'm not knocking any comic who's doing virtual comedy. I'm not knocking it. Get your gig. Do your thing. But I can't help but think from the audience perspective, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's just not. This you are doing something different. You are not doing stand-up comedy. You're not. You're not doing it. You are being entertaining. You are providing a type of entertainment. We just have to call it something else. But it's not.
It's not stand-up.
It's not stand-up. Someone so an audience member who misses stand-up comedy, who misses going to a show, grabbing their drink, their little thing of wings or whatever the fuck, and chilling back, and that experience, that back and forth, that laughing, that, oh shit, that guy better shut the fuck up. Those people, like, but that's how I became a stand-up comedian, because I love going to see stand-up comedy, you know? So it's like, I know what they want, you know, like, and they haven't had that. They've been at home. They've been at home watching Netflix specials. They've been at home and Netflix specials are great. They're great, but it's nothing like a live show. It's not the same thing. It's a different thing. You're watching a recording of a live, you know, but I guarantee you the people who were there
had a great time.
And however funny you thought that Netflix special was. And you probably thought it was the most hilarious thing in the world. And maybe it was for you at that moment. But let me tell you something. If you were physically there, that level is about 10 times higher.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're experiencing it differently. They're not just talking to a camera. They're talking to you. That joke about the jeans, because that last guy, that opener, had like a rip on the jeans. And so like it's more of a journey you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And so... So I know when comedy hits hard, because, you know, there's, like you said, there's some social distancing comedy shows going on right now, but like a packed room where everyone, like the bachelorette party, the games, we're going to go see the fights, and, you know, and everyone's out there for the birthday and everything, a big crowd. And that's what people want again. That's going to be a very unique experience. And hopefully we're not too rusty to botch those. And I hope comics take that into consideration. It was like, whatever, which I actually am excited for, because that means the small rooms are going to have a lot more, you know, life in them. Because I think a lot of the comics with, you know, chops, mm-hmm. are going to have to be like, hey, time to support that open mic.
Yeah.
Remember that open mic that you never go to? Time, go to it. Go to it. Bring some people, you know, like, which is great for the small businesses. It's great for those bars. It's great for those places that just run that Wednesday open mics. Great for them, because it's like, wow, we got so many comics coming in now. They're because they need to work.
Right.
This is the gym. Time for the gym workout, you know, because you don't want to, because we know we can't botch that paid gig. Can't botch it, you know.
That's right.
Because now there's like, that now there's like 300 of us who have been out of work for a year who want it. Want it. Well, at least that's my interpretation. I have no idea. I've been gabbing away. I have no idea your opinion about this.
I mean, I think we agree on a lot of this stuff. I mean, we share the same sentiment. You know, we're tired of the grind, but at the same time, that's why we also really have a deep reverence for the craft.
Yeah.
So I think we agree. We share that very same sentiment on all of it. I don't know. It sounds like to me, you ready?
I haven't been getting high off of it in so long that I'm like, I don't know anymore. I don't know. And I just, and it's also with the last, all my fans for the podcast, I haven't had a lot of comics on recently. You know, like recently I've had a lot of random TikTok personalities on, because I started doing TikTok, and there's like, you know, they're like, oh, I like you. You also have like 160,000 followers, so I'm going to talk to you.
Right.
And so the conversations are different. We're not talking about stand-up. We're not talking about any of that stuff. They're talking about their random, unique, personal journey. So I've had the luxury of not talking to another comic buddy of mine in a minute, talking about comedy. And because normally it's about what you do Wednesday? Oh, you know, saw the fights. And, you know, like, there's no...
Yeah, it's so boring.
Yeah. Well, it's because that's the exciting thing we've done for so long has been... Dude, I went to this show, man. After the show, this chick, you know, like, oh shit, what's going on? Like, there's no wild chuckabunny stories. There's none of that anymore. So, you know, so it's been I've been kind of having, and then the second I talk to you, I'm like, ooh.
We get it.
Yeah. You really do.
Are you like, still looking at comedy specials and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm still. Oh yeah, I can't help it. Okay. I can't help it. I love the crap. I love the art. I love the art too much to just like really. But and that's probably why I'm never going to be able to quit, you know, stand up until I'm too old to do it, or they have paid me some obscene amount of money to do something else. And it still fulfills that same desire, which I have no idea what that desire would be. Maybe if I ran great comedy shows all across the country, I guess, maybe. Mm-mm. But
you're gonna want to get on stage.
I'm gonna want to get on stage. I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna be that asshole guy who's like some new young black comics like, hey man, so you did that knows me. Do I want to give up my 10 minutes for this fucking shit? Right. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, I will though. But yeah, I'm never gonna stop. If I still decide to watch, if I even watch stand-up comedy, I'm gonna want to do it. I'm just going to want to do it. And it's easier when I can't, like right now. It's easier to say, oh, I don't know. Because you physically can't. You can't do it. You can't do it because you don't want to run the risk of getting your mom or your brother sick. You know, so you have that. I have that nice little excuse right there. I'm like, no, I ain't doing it right now. You know, mom's, you know, brother's overweight, you know, so, you know, statistically, you know, the people our age who die from COVID are overweight, and my mom has low white blood. Okay, so I can't really do it. They're vaccinated. What's your excuse? I got nothing. I'm out. I'm gonna be out. I'll see you guys at the 8:00.
I'm gonna hit you up and be like, where you at?
I'm gonna be like, yeah, I'm here. I'm gonna be at a club. I can't wait, honestly. There's like, and now I've gotten to know, it's crazy. I'm on this podcast and I'm talking to all these people on TikTok who are in different states I've never performed in. And so I couldn't help it. I'm like talking to them like, oh, where are you at? Oh, I'm in South Dakota.
Right.
I never performed in South Dakota. Huh. I can't help but think. I'm like, oh shit. It's starting to happen.
Do you have a favorite city to perform in? Besides Vegas.
Besides Vegas. Right. You know, this is weird. Utah was a delight. I have no idea why. I have no reason to, you know, like it was Salt Lake City, and they love me. They just love, every time I've gone there, the amount of love, and they want to party with you, and they just like, just general wholesome. It's aesthetically beautiful, you know, like, I'm the guy who I walk around a lot because I have all this energy. And so like, at one point I'll just chill at the bar and drink with everyone. But most of the time I like to, you know, have my smoke. But I like to walk. I like to walk around. So I like people watching. And Utah is just pretty. It's just a pretty place. You know, the mountains, the trees, the stream, multiple streams. And growing up in LA,
the air quality.
Yeah, it's smog. It's homelessness. It's, you know, grime. It's corrupt. It's just, hey officer, it's that. You know, Utah, I still got to worry about that, hey officer, but you know, like It's just everyone's nice. Everyone's just pleasant and nice. And so far, Salt Lake City, Utah has been my favorite place to do stand-up. What about you?
Houston, Texas.
Really? Texas.
Houston, Texas. How is Houston?
I haven't done stand-up in Houston. I've been to Houston, but I've never done stand-up there.
Okay. I would say they have a few places. There's the Laugh Stop is down there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what it is about Houston. Like you said about Utah, it's just certain cities you go to, the energy matches your energy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. As artists, whatever you need, you get it from that city.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like that, those, like, your people. And from an artistic, like, they just vibe. You just reach that same wavelength of comedy. That is like, oh, they just and they show it in a way that, you know, that's just unique from all their towns. I should say, it was kind of hard for me to think of Utah as it, because I've had those experiences in just random places. I also had experiences that weren't as good as I had originally anticipated. You know, I was like, I thought I'll connect more with you guys a little bit more. I remember, like, I was doing in San Francisco, and I had, and I thought, I'm going to fucking kill this crowd. I did good. I did great. I did good. I mean, like, but it wasn't like, and luckily I had more than one show, of course. So it was like, oh, okay, good. Whew, I thought I was losing a step there for a second. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, I thought I was just, I just got to probably go back. I just got to probably go back. And then I did. And then the crowd started vibing a little bit, vibing a lot more with me. But then there's like every so often but then it's the most random I had, because Utah, I had no, if anything, I thought they weren't going to like me, you know, because of the rep of Mormon, you know, like just this, because I come from Catholic, you know, this like, ooh, do I really want to like our shows that are in a location that's such a dominant religion, mm-hmm. where religion is just like the dominant cultural pivot point, mm-hmm. for everything, you know, like you can get 6 months in Utah for having a pipe on you, for having a weed pipe, no weed just on you,
pipe.
Just a pipe. Like I remember I was checking out a law, and it's like weed paraphernalia will get you 6 months. I was so fucked. I'm like, God, I gotta smoke all my weed right now, and I can't even leave my room, because I'm like, who really gets that? Because like that seems like an extremely harsh punishment, which I have an idea, and not for nothing, I have an inclination on who gets that harsh punishment. I'm pretty sure it's not, you know, Liam, who got busted with, is probably the black guy from out of town, you mm-hmm. know?
What, you well, know, you so. Know, you bring up another point, and see, black comics, we don't get to have these sorts of conversations, but I know being a black road comic, you do have to look up what the laws are, mm-hmm. what the politics are, how black people are treated.
Yeah.
You got to look just that up.
You gotta keep that in mind. Where are the loitering? Cause like, I know I walk around. I know I walk around a lot. What's the loitering laws here? What, like, can I just walk around? Can I walk around? Can I find like a nice little spot where I see a bench and a table and I have my cup of coffee? Can I have my cup of coffee and just chill here and not get a cop to tell me, hey, which still happens, but like cops are like, hey, are you doing all right? I'm performing. I'm performing right over there. I'm not on until 10. I got here early. You know, so just coffee, officer, you know. And, you know, so it just on those, and I like my weed. I like smoking. So it's like one of those, I got to do like, what are the weed laws?
Mm-hmm.
What are the weed laws like? Because legal ain't always legal. You know, right. there's a little bit of, you know, little, like, oh, I thought weed was legal. Yeah, but you can't do that here right now. Hands behind your back. I was like, whoa, that's...
Wouldn't it be horrible if you got arrested before a show?
Oh, my God. That would be... I want to know that story. I can only imagine. I've seen comics be late for shows for a plethora of reasons. You know, car broke down, guy's a fuck up, and he just got drunk and high. And in. I'll never understand that concept of, you know, like, he's late. I know black people have a history of being late, but I have almost never seen a black comic late for their set. And like, of a black comic I respect.
Right.
You know? And I was like, yeah, because they know if you're fucking late, you know, like, you're not going to hear the end of it. But like, I've never, you know, I can't even imagine getting arrested before a show. And I think now that I put that out there in the universe,
it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I would imagine you could get out of it, though. I have a show at the such and such called The Booker. I think The Booker, I would hope The Booker would get, unless it's an asshole.
Listen, that guy. It was like, who? Wait, who?
Right.
No. Easy way to not pay you. But yeah, man. But man, we've been talking for an hour and a half. Samson, thank you so much for coming on the show. I actually am so happy that we've had this conversation. I have not had this conversation on the show.
We both needed it.
Not once.
We both needed
it. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you kind of asking me that question, and we were able to get on in there. But you got a movie coming out, man. You got a movie I want people to check out.
It's called Love the One You're With. We shot it during the pandemic. It was illegal. We shot it illegally. But I'm proud of it, and it'll be out later this month on Amazon and Vim Media. Vim Media is like the black queer Netflix, in my opinion.
Well, I'm getting a subscription then.
It's really good stuff. And that's the thing, you know, just like you said earlier, you know, about just our experiences and even like your experience in Utah. I think what helps us, however we show up, but like, for instance, like you said, with Utah, going to a Mormon place and you have that Catholic base allows you to be able to connect, because, I mean, these are still experiences that you've had. What makes it more interesting is that you've had these same experiences as these folks, but you're black. So it's like, and there's a curiosity about black people anyway. So
yeah, they want to see the world. Yeah. They want to see the world through our eyes, because they know the world is different.
It's better. More interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's better, guys. It's better. Until the cops show up, it's way better.
Yeah, until the cops pull up. It's more, it got more flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just like that, I think it's important for people to be able to see things from the black queer perspective. And that's basically another reason why we do what we do, because, I mean, it's at the core, even though I don't know how much of an extrovert you are when it comes to, like, larger audiences, I think at the core we do it because there's something in us that does kind of like people somewhere a little bit.
Oh yeah, I can't get enough of it. I can't get enough of the crowd after the show. I'm the walker before the show. Before the show, I'm the walker and the moving around. But after the show's over, I love those audiences. I can't get enough of them. I can't get enough of that. These are the moments my extrovertedness. These are the moments where I get to really jump into the audience, you know, and yeah, we're there. If you got a black comic on the stage, they're gonna be in that crowd. They're gonna be there with you.
Oh yeah.
It's a unique experience that only black comics can give you. But Love the One You're With. It's gonna drop on Vim Media in the coming month.
So it's actually on there now. So it's VIM Media. So it's VIM2.tv. And it'll be on Amazon later this month, and we're gonna start hitting up film festivals. It's a really good story.
I cannot wait to check it out. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Tell Me a Story. Thank y'all. Good night.
And that's the show. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to giving you guys more stories, more guests. You guys keep on listening. Our numbers are growing every week. And it's thanks to you guys. So please continue to like, share, subscribe. If you want to support other ways, you can follow me on Instagram or Facebook. My handle is Bell Comedy. That's also my Cash App handle, $BellComedy, one word, if you want to support other ways. We will have a Patreon up that will be a little bit easier for you guys to directly donate. And Thank you for listening to Tell Me a Story. Love y'all. Bye.